This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Yawning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Tuesday, the 21st of June, 2022, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. It's Tuesday. That means it's a World News Tuesday with Mark Palmer. Good morning, Mr. Palmer.
Good morning, Erin. How you doing?
I am overwhelmed, Mr. Palmer.
Yes, I can see.
I spent the night putting together some notes, some stories for us to talk about things I think happening in the world that should be of interest to the Bahamas. And then I woke up this morning and looked at the headlines, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. The Bahamas is like a jealous woman. Draw your attention. Don't focus on the rest of the world. Focus on me. So I'm hoping today, maybe if we have enough time, we can intersperse some headlines with the world news stories that we are looking at. I want to say good morning to all of the people on the road, walkers, the launchers. I want to say good morning to a particular group of people. We are all dealing with hard times, economically, psychologically, some people even legally. It's just stressful all around. Despite the fact that the systems that run the country don't appear to be aware. Like the systems have not changed to accommodate. They have not adapted to the dynamics that the pandemic have presented to the vast majority of people. Yesterday, I talked a bit about the housing crisis and indicating that housing crisis is not something that one person can solve on their own. And if someone is lucky enough to have a strong enough family support system, then maybe a temporary solution can be achieved. Someone has a strong enough community, communal system, maybe a temporary solution can be achieved, or a permanent solution for one or a small group of people. But a problem as big as a housing crisis is not something that we can expect one person to solve on their own, especially not one person that got a D, is a part of the D average crew, right? Especially not one person who's making minimum wage. Especially not one person who has excelled in academia, in high school, has given the opportunity to go to the University of the Bahamas. But due to a backlog in some government department, the citizenship has not been processed yet, right? They're doing all of the right things, but yet they're faced with a problem that they cannot solve on their own and should not be expected to solve on their own. But we have a lot of Bahamians right now today that are walking the road trying to find, you see them looking to the ground, they're trying to find that solution. Maybe it's here in the dirt, in the road, track road I walk every day. I bought a couple of them people on the road this morning. And I want to say this, that we have some people who are on these roads desperately trying to seek a solution by themselves. They are panhandling. They are asking people for money. The term we use is begging. Some of these people have been in this position for a very long time. They've been doing this for a very long time, and their faces are familiar to us. Now, it's important to note that not every hale and hearty man or woman has the capacity to go to work, quote unquote, to maintain a 9-to-5. Some of the people that we see, although they are strong and fit, they could pick up a tree and when they throw it down, a whole house appear. But they may be going through psychological, emotional issues, mental issues that become barriers for them participating like regular people in the workforce. It's important to understand that. I'm not speaking to those people. I'm speaking to the people who would go out on the streets and take advantage. Right? You're taking advantage of a multitude of people. You're taking advantage of the community that you're mimicking. When you go on the road and you pretend to be disabled, particularly when you pretend to be physically disabled, that is an insult to people living with disabilities, many of which have determined that they will just have to navigate this world like able-bodied people do, despite their disability. It is an insult to see you on the road pretending to be disabled. Now, the constituency of people I'm talking about know who I'm talking about. Some of you are running scams. Some of you are desperate because of substance abuse. And we can understand what desperation does to a person. But like I said to a young man this morning, I'm not talking to you because I think what you're doing is disgusting and you need to stop it. I'm talking to you because I think what you're doing is stupid and dangerous and you're going to get yourself killed. Because people do not take being taken advantage of lightly. I've already seen on social media an escalation, like vigilante justice, people talking about what they're going to do if they catch these people scamming on the streets. If you are an able-bodied person, if you are not suffering from emotional disability, psychological or mental disability, please do not take advantage of the people who do and draw on the sympathy of the wider community that is prepared to support them, no matter what. Don't do that. It's not a good look. It's not a good model, an example to set for younger Bahamians. It's not a good example to set for struggling Bahamians. And if you're sharp enough, if you're sharp enough to come up with that scam, then you sharp enough to come up with an actual idea. And I would give you one right now, but I could see my business partner looking at me, cutting the eye and sucking the teeth if you give away one more idea, Miss Green. But please, stop it. And if you know these people, encourage them to stop it too. Let's support the people that really, really need our help. You got the brains. God gave you the brains. Use it for something positive, collective positivity. Producer, I see a call there. Let's go to the call. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller.
I have an answer for the trivia.
Oh, there was a trivia this morning? Okay. I don't know what the question is, ma'am. You could give the answer. We can have a good time. But I don't know what the question is. That was for Dwight's show, wasn't it?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, you give me the answer. I'm going to write it down, and I will forward it to Mr. Strawn for his consideration.
Okay, is it Jerome Gomez? The other one, Cameron, is Ben Angel, A-N-G-E-N-E.
A-N-G-E-L-E, okay.
N-E. The other is Nidha, N-I-D-H-I. Last name, K-N-A-R-E. The three chairmen of the Consumer Protection Commission. I think that's it.
Okay, here's what you do, ma'am. Leave your number with the producer. If this is the correct answer, Mr. Strawn will contact you with your prize.
Okay.
Yes,
thank
ma'am.
Thank you.
You are welcome. You are welcome. But you can't... You know how long she's been holding on? Mr. Palmer, we definitely going to facilitate that. Mr. Strawn, if you are listening, I hope that she is a winner. All right. Great show as usual. Hold on. Time out. Run that by me again. Someone pretending to be disabled, tell me where that fool is. No, I'm not going to tell you where they are. But these are the issues, right? This is the concern that we have. No. We get it. Some problems are bigger than one person can solve. Now, this part is for the government. Your job is to assist, facilitate, create an environment in which people can direct their own lives and solve their own problems. Your job, though, is to ensure that those things that people cannot solve individually, that there's a collective space to do that work in. That's your job, government. That's your job. When you see an increase in beggars on the street, you should be concerned, right? You should go into social services and say, we need an investigation as to why there's been this drastic increase in numbers. Are the NGOs not up to, do they not have the capacity to serve extra constituents, more people? Where do we need to divert the funds? How can we prevent, right? How can we deal with a social issue before it becomes a criminal issue? That's the job of the state and its agents. People will become overwhelmed when you expect them to solve these massive problems on their own. And that's why I can't tell you where the boy is, right? No, man, I don't like hot potties. I can't help me. I can't eat hot potty. No, sir. No, sir, that can't help me. Anyway.
But you know, accommodation is such an important thing. There's a lot of data now, I think. I saw something recently, Ohio, somewhere like Ohio, where what they did to solve the homelessness issue is to give them homes.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they got into those homes, they brought social services in to support them, to give them whatever support they needed. And you know what they found out?
Mm-hmm.
By actually building the homes and giving them homes, it was cheaper than just leaving them on the street.
Mm-hmm. And so, trying to to fund NGOs and groups to support them.
Well, it's just the additional cost, you know, the cost that through the criminal justice system, through the healthcare system, through all the various other things, is higher than the cost of actually accommodating them. Mm-hmm. It's a bit like, you know, when you look at Medicare for all in the States, every report I've seen shown that if you give Medicare to all, you save $120 billion.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So it's all counterintuitive, but nobody seems to want to do it. But there's more certainly if you look at the northern European countries, they've solved the homelessness problem. They found that 80% of people that get, once they get their homes, go back and live a normal life, working, paying taxes, etc. 80%. And so there's a lot of data. We seem to still be in this Victorian period where you just let people sort it out by themselves on the street, right? And think that it's somehow a less cost-effective solution, but it actually costs us more.
Right. And then we have this cultural attitude. If you get them that, they just go waste it. They just go waste it up. If you get them the house, they just go break it up. But these studies are showing that
every study where they gave people money shows that they used it responsibly.
Yeah.
Every study they did in the States, because like you say, people have that, oh, well, you know, they're going to spend it on drugs and booze, but they don't. The data is completely different. People, once they have money, they use it for nappies, you know, things that they need. And so, again, you know, the data is out there.
Yeah.
I think this, you know, we should embrace that data.
As two interesting things I always think about when I think about the housing situation in the U.S. and homelessness, houselessness, right? One, there are more abandoned homes in the U.S. than there are unhoused people. So there's no lack of inventory. The homes exist. The question is, why are people not being directed? And I mean like directed to these homes. Why are they not being placed? The second is, I think in Colorado as well, they did an alternate approach to substance abuse mediation or mitigation. And the vast majority of shelters in the U.S. are sober living shelters, right? So you cannot access this facility in any of its parts if you are intoxicated, right? You can't use the bathroom, you can't wash up, you can't overnight, you can't get on the list. So you can't get on the list when you're drunk, hoping to be sober by the time it's time to check in. But in Colorado, they changed, they used a new model where they created shelters for people people with substance issues, not restricting your access. So you don't have to be sober to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw a tremendous change. They saw people beginning to manage their addiction and then people mm-hmm. beginning to wean themselves off, right? Going into drug rehab. But the biggest...
You have to help them in situ. You can't say you got to sort out your own mental problems that got you or whatever
right.
that addiction, lack of connection, whatever caused that issue. Oh, you got to sort it out first before you can get our hand out. Because it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
You know, once you need support. And plus, the most important thing, you need a roof over your head. So it takes the pressure off.
Right.
Survival.
And that's one of the key things that they found is that the stress associated with being homeless is driving substance abuse.
Of course.
Yeah. And so I thought, like...
When are we going to get out of this Victorian mentality? It's really is remarkable. We have the data.
And how did we find ourselves in this place where you could go to jail for not having somewhere to live? And children can be essentially criminalized because their parents cannot find or maintain a place, a safe place for them to live. And how did we get to this place in 2022? And how have we established those? I want to call them cultures because I think systems and business, like systems and industries can have culture too, right? Mm-hmm. Like when did this capitalist culture take root in the Bahamas? And how could that type of culture take root in a place where, or if I could rephrase it, how could we have unhoused people in a country that regularly subsidizes hotel stays, hotel costs for tourists? You invite people here and tell them either you'll pay for their hotel room or you'll pay for the flight. But you are criminalizing and allowing to suffer Bahamians, and I won't say other Caribbean people too, although that is a little nuance. Some of y'all get upset. But how is it that you pay in a part of the cost for people who supposed to be paying to visit your country as a part of your economic model, but you can't figure out why it is that you as the state should support in a greater way your own citizens who are homeless? And it's something that we collectively have to reckon with.
You know, it would be interesting to see, do some data on how many homes were not used, you know, unutilized. Because I drive through our urban neighborhoods. I see plenty of homes that are either derelict, shuttered up, and probably wouldn't take very much to get them to go. And I thought, wasn't that what urban renewal was supposed to do?
Right, but urban renewal doesn't get the funding that tourism gets. See, if urban renewal got the funding that tourism got, then we would actually have a, same way we have in a census, we would have a structural census, right? We would take account of all of the homes, spaces that are available to be homes, and then we would invest, which I think you've laid the argument in another space, that investing in repairing homes and existing structures may be less expensive than housing or incarcerating all of these homeless people.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, you know how much it costs to, and I know, what is the cost of incarcerating somebody in the Bahamas? It's something like $10,000 a year. It may even be more. That's just the physical, the prison cost. But when you actually factor in social services, the judicial system, it's somewhere like $30,000 a year.
Wow. Wow.
That's a salary. That's a pretty good salary, right?
That's more than starting salary for teachers,
I'm
Mark.
I'm telling you.
Wow. Okay. I got a caller here. Yeah. Producer, let's go to this caller. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Morning, Miss Green. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How you doing, Sparky?
Right here. Good morning to you again. You know, my find so difficult. I keep telling you, I'm 71 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I find it so difficult. We keep talking about this addiction and this and that in this country.
Mm-hmm.
When I was an 18, 17-year-old boy, just coming out of government high and everything back in the 70s, this marijuana and alcohol and tobacco was around here. Mm-hmm. And all my days, I've been hearing them fighting about the religious leaders fighting about marijuana this and marijuana that. I've never heard anybody caught cancer from marijuana or died from an overdose of marijuana. I heard people die from cirrhosis of liver, from alcohol, and people die from lung cancer from smoking tobacco. Yet the big tobacco importers and the big breweries and so forth and liquor and merchants that bring import liquor into this country, they make more money in this country legally. But marijuana, what doesn't kill anybody, and I've never been proven to kill anybody, all the different committees we had and paid for them to travel all around the Caribbean doing investigations, we never come up with an answer why they keeping marijuana illegal and all the other things that kill us, they have that legal. Because you know why marijuana is illegal? Illegal?
Tell me.
The big money that they make from it.
If
they make it legal, and you're allowed to grow it in your backyard like you could grow up Saracen, the big pushers and the drug dealers, they will lose all their income. Because I'll be able to grow my marijuana tree in the backyard and smoke or make my tea whenever I want to. They are intentionally keeping it illegal for big money reasons.
That's
and the breweries are here. You could go down there and order a trailer load
now, Sparky,
of Guinness.
Sparky, don't talk about the rum. Don't talk about the rum. You want these people to start attacking me? Hey, do not go.
No, but we talk about
alcohol.
The but you could go out, if you got the money, you could go down to the brewery and order a trailer load of doggone Guinness
mm-hmm.
if you could get in your backyard and nobody could bother you. You could drink yourself to death. They don't care. But you get one little spliff of joint, they put you in jail.
That's up, mate. They don't even care if you 17 Guinness in on the road. You could be 17 Guinness deep on the road. They don't care.
Because when the police pull you over, he drove too.
Okay,
you just
okay,
left them in the bar.
Sparky, I got to cut you, Sparky. You talking these people business. Talking these people business, Sparky, but thank you. It's a sound point that you made.
Well, speaking of police, when are we going to have a woman police commissioner?
Man, look, y'all just want to throw the controversy out there. That's
when?
Something,
eh? Come on, man.
Okay, we're going to get to all that right after this text and then maybe a break. But listen to this text, Mark. Aaron, isn't it presumptuous of you and others to determine who is disabled, especially when you haven't checked them medically? Their text, I think I made a distinction that we're not talking about people who have mental disabilities. But the person that I am referencing, that gentleman has good sense. And even if he may be suffering with a mental disability, he is clearly aware that what he is doing is not above board. Many people have spoken to him. I know people who don't have sense that have spoken to him and know that what he is doing is not above board. But I am of great concern because I listened and heard people with my own ears suggest that the person need a beating. And close enough to the person to do something about it, the proximity to where the person sets up. It's not a joke, and I'm not being presumptuous. Maybe I didn't frame it seriously enough. But this is something that we could take care of right now. First of all, the first point is that we should not leave people to have to rely on this method to support themselves. It's obvious where the people are who need help, and it's obvious where the people are who have the resources and the capacity to help. All right, and that's the first part of the critique. Second part of the critique is if you are able-bodied and you are smart enough to devise a plan like this, because lots of money can be made from panhandling. This is a deep culture. This didn't start with poor black people. This didn't start with lazy people. This is an industry over hundreds of years. Right, if you're smart enough to come up with this, you're smart enough to come up with something else. And here's why it's important. Because you are disadvantaging the people who actually need this help. You're disadvantaging the people who could actually sort of get a step up or begin to support themselves with this type of help. I'm not denouncing the thing itself, the panhandling. I'm saying practice some spatial awareness because you got good sense. And see the people that you are also hurting with your actions. Text goes on. Callers, don't go nowhere. I'm coming right now. The text says, you seem to like to shift wealth and prosperity. That is not something to simply put in one person's hand because they need it. Our world is built on merit-based productivity. No work, no merit, no prosperity. Thinking like yours discourages hard work. Okay, so you were the person that designed the plantation model. No, you're not. You can't be the person who designed the plantation model, but you are deeply entrenched in it and perhaps are unaware of how it operates around you. Don't ever say that. Everybody on this planet deserves things. Safe, adequate place to live, like access to health care, like access to clean water. These are things. And
good education.
Good education, and people deserve them. Remember, merit base. You see where you live, Texa? I just got to put on the right shoes and the right tie and walk into an office, and I could swing enough people to have a government job. Maybe even be in the OPM's office. Anyway, caller, you're on the clock.
Karen Grant.
Good morning.
And morning to your guest. I don't know who it is that came into your show, the latest, the little best, and listening to you at the same time.
Yes, sir.
Who are your guests here?
Mr. Mark Palmer, World News.
Hey. How you do?
Hey, it's my boy. How you doing?
All right.
Oh, it's good to hear from you. I'm going to PD Banker, what Sparky was saying.
Uh-huh.
And also, you talk about disabled. Uh-huh. When I get here, I want you to sometimes have disabled folks to be your co-host or be guests.
You
to talk
right?
About parent issues, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Your human rights approach. You say you believe in human rights, but I ain't seen no disabled people on your show yet. It's almost 2 years, eh? You've been going.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I've had Aaron Brown on, but not as a co-host. You're right.
Okay. But my main point is marijuana will be legalized for medical purposes. I believe there's a draft, and they're drafting up a bill to make that purpose, because even with my muscle ability, my doctor recommend that marijuana be good for me.
Uh-huh.
So marijuana is not just smoking your brain out.
Mm-hmm.
It is a herb from my village in Jamaica, I know this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a herb that you use for tea and healing purposes. It's like sorrel seed. Have you explored sorrel seed in aloes?
Yeah,
that's how marijuana is. And we need to take a close look at it, because we grow good marijuana for economic purpose, medical purpose, and social purpose.
Yeah.
The right way.
Absolutely.
And I know my church family is going to say, oh, Lord, Peter gone, Peter back live. But no. I believe in my heart. I mean, what God gives me.
Listen.
And one of the things God gives us is good marijuana. Bahamas could grow good marijuana.
Listen, the studies show you can't say that yourself because you don't use it. Because it's against the law. But did you know that the government in Thailand handed out 1,000 cannabis plants in a province called Buriram, because the country has officially decriminalized marijuana cultivation and possession. Let me tell you why it's important to decriminalize cultivation and local use. Let me tell you why. Because the vast majority of cocaine that's imported, of marijuana that's brought into the country, cannabis that's brought into the country, is along with other contraband, like cocaine. Cocaine is the most valuable of the two, right? And so they're going to process the cocaine first. And they're probably going to then process the cannabis in the same working space that they process the cocaine in. And so a lot of your cannabis can be cocaine tainted or tinted or accidentally laced, which can then become a problem for people, obviously. I say just put down the cocaine. Put it down. But any lacing could be a problematic, particularly for people with some psychological issues or they're unaware of some mental issue that they're having, right? And so you want to protect your citizens. You can't stop the cannabis. You just can't stop it entirely. You want to protect your citizens, lift the prohibition, allow local cultivation so that you could protect the people that use it. That's a part of the culture, you know? Thank you very much, and let's on it. I think you have the show line, 428-0719. Message me and give me a list of potential guest co-hosts and put your name at the top of the list. Put your name at the top of the list. Producer, is it time to go to a break? Let's go to a break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to look at this story in the newspaper, Fernanda to become new police commissioner. And then we're going to look at a story that isn't in the newspaper. Are we passing over something? Did we miss something out? I'm not saying that Fernanda is not a good choice. I'm just saying that it seems like we missed a part of this conversation. We're going to talk about it after the break. You're on the clock with Aaron Green. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
How important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
The Water and Sewage Corporation advises customers residing in the areas of Blue Hill Road North, East Street, Palmdale, Shirley Street, Kemp Road, Village Road, Bay and West Bay Streets, that the corporation will commence disconnection of water supply on Monday, June 20th, 2022, in the mentioned areas. To avoid disconnection of the water supply, customers whose accounts are in arrears or who have not honored their financial agreements are advised to see that their accounts are brought up to date or risk the disconnection of their water supply without further notice.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On the Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the solution. Sponsor On the Clock with Aaron Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning and welcome back to On the Clock with Aaron Green. You're on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Mr. Palmer is joining me today. Good morning.
Good morning, Aaron.
Let's get one or two more texts here. Housing. Maintenance is an issue when it becomes, in a lot of circumstances, shanty towns. Now, see, that's about culture. I'm glad you mentioned that text, because we would say, yeah, a lot of people be in rental properties because they are not equipped or don't have the capacity or the desire to be a responsible homeowner and to do all of the things that are required to maintain a home up to code and up to community standards and legal standards. Rental spaces are not bad. They're not irresponsible either, right? There are some places where there's a benefit to renting versus owning, especially when you don't have to pay property tax every year. But that benefit cannot be realized unless you have real regulations in place for renters and for landlords, right? It's not a benefit if the landlord does not maintain the rental property regularly up to a particular standard, right? But no, not everybody should own a house. But in this culture, you see, in this culture, you can't be an adult unless you have your own house. Right? So, Texter, you that's an important point that you make about maintenance. But here's the next point. Let's not suggest that it's only poor people that don't know about maintenance. Let's not suggest that it's just lazy people who don't know about maintenance. Your whole entire government, since its inception, since independence, has refused to maintain anything but the regulations and rules that protect them and give them privilege. They run buildings around. They rent, so they have this policy, right, where they rent from people. But they don't perform any maintenance like a tenant. They don't fulfill any of their obligations as a tenant to maintain the space that they're in. So the people that we renting out from, they almost win two and three times by the time we're done, because you've worn the building down and now you have to pay some massive fee to return it to its original state.
As soon as we ever get FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, that's the first thing I want to put in. Lists of government buildings.
Look here, as soon as your mummy give you a Freedom of Information Act, we'll have it. You know your mummy ain't into that.
I know, but wouldn't that be great to know? Because I know it feels bad, you know. They haven't had any maintenance That was that building, the one, the
do you mean the one that my MP took a picture of himself in front of on East Street opposite my Grammy house? I can't say. See, Mark, then I realize my Grammy house is in a poor state as well. But maybe we just trying to match the barracks. Because my Grammy's a good woman. She don't want to outshine the barracks. And that's why my Grammy house looked the way it looked right now. Yeah. But let's not suggest that it's just poor people. Let me tell you the extent to which it flows. That we are so not invested in maintenance. You can't rent tools for a sensible price in this town. We expect people to maintain their homes, but we refuse to provide the tools, the culture, the space, the industry for them to do it with.
I mean, even the best neighborhoods, you know, I went in Buen Retiro. You're probably familiar with that. But I would say probably, you know, 25% of the homes are not well maintained. Mm. Some are derelict. And that's supposed to be a good middle class area. So it's all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I see we got a caller on the line, producer. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. Good morning, caller. I missed you. My apologies. Let's see that next caller. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Godly days talking of voice with you and your guest, Aaron.
Good morning. Morning, Bremen. How you do?
Morning. I'm just sitting here listening to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know the problem we have in this country?
Mm-hmm.
Even people, the rich people, right? So-called rich.
Mm-hmm.
Say the government puts them in a position whereby they can't make any money to take care of their building. And the same thing happening with the poor. Not only that, then they go and pass law whereby they could have somebody take your property while they're sitting there. You know what I'm saying? That's illegal. That's nasty. If you're not providing for the people, if you're not making way for the people to make it, whereby they could do the things that needs to be done,
mm-hmm.
how you expect
them to do it.
You see what I'm saying?
Thank you
very
much.
But you pass law with it, or you can have other people to take it after a certain line of time. That's nastiness.
Thank you. Thank you, Bremen. It's good points that you make, you know? It's good points that you make.
You know, the sad thing, you know, on Cumberland Street, there were those three historic buildings.
Mm-hmm.
You notice they were recently demolished.
Yes.
Finally, the landlords let him get into such a state that they became a public nuisance and they were allowed to finally demolish them. Mm-hmm. But they're beautiful buildings. What are we going to have there now? A parking lot? And that's so sad.
That's probably what's going to go there. It's unfortunate. This one is apparently the legislation, while it provides for the sort of preservation of what exists, it doesn't lay out or demand that they repair.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if
has
it
no teeth.
If it outlines the standard, right? So you come here and this is what you have to follow. But I think it's a lack of political will, and it's a culture that we need to delve into.
It's like you say, it's cultural. It goes across the whole.
Because those spaces are valuable to fall into disrepair or to be used as parking lots. You know, as parking lots. Imagine it was already no sidewalk. We really didn't care about people with foot.
Mm.
And now, that's a horrible one, but it speaks to the culture around land use and around ownership and who do things belong to, right? And what's the cost of things? Like, if it costs me something, if I lose something for you to have this thing, right, then do you take that into account? And do you consider me when you're going to determine what to do with that thing next? Anyway, it's heavy and troubling, but it's something that we have to delve into, right? Because we have a housing crisis in a country where we invite people and sometimes pay for them to come and stay here. It's a sad state of affairs, but it's important, right? Are we going to get into, we definitely, let's see, we got 10 minutes left. We can get into that. But I want to say there's another conversation that's going on, Mark, right? There is the I think Coalition of Independent Team that's on this campaign to protect Crown land for Bahamians. And I'm just like, I think you can hear the problem in the question, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is Crown Land. But I don't want us to, while we attempt to ignore the campaign itself, I don't want us to ignore the concerns that drive the campaign, right? Because it's the concerns, that's the kinetic energy, that's what's driving the campaign, and it would be foolish of us to ignore those concerns. And those concerns are rooted in the idea that I do not belong in my country, my own country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's rooted in the idea that I couldn't belong in my own country if I don't have a place to live. And that idea is exacerbated by this idea that there are people who are not from my country that have a place to live. Not just that they have the place to live when I don't have a place to live, it's almost as if they're being prioritized in the process of finding places to live, right? And that's very concerning for any citizen in any country. That is very, very valid, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The other stuff we need to interrogate and figure out what's going on, but it would be foolish for the political class and the powers that be to ignore the concerns of these people. It would be detrimental to your career in governance and detrimental to your political career, because those are two separate things, people. Right? The idea that you could sit back and have people suggest that you didn't work hard enough for a place to live, for decent housing. You just didn't do what was required of you. And the last time I checked, the only thing that was required of you to have access to safe, decent, adequate housing is to be born, is to be alive. You could be the most disgusting person on the planet. You could be the worst criminal ever. There's still a prescription. You go to jail and then we pay how much? Up to $30,000 a year to take care of you. Because the law defines that even criminals have rights.
Just think, that could be a rent. That 30 grand, that'd get a hell of a rent, right? 30 grand a year, you could probably rent 3 or 4 buildings for that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a down that's a down payment, that's a deposit on a home. There mm-hmm. could be a deposit on 2 homes, on property, mm-hmm. on 2, 3, 4 pieces of property. We really need to reconsider, you know, I guess maybe we shouldn't have...
It's always punishment, never rehabilitation.
Yeah.
That's the model, you know, that we're talking about.
Yeah,
the plantation model.
Yeah, always punishment,
and
we always focus on having to punish you versus mm-hmm. our obligation to create a state where you can do these things by yourself. Anyway, Mark. So, Fernanda to become new police commissioner.
How does that happen? What is the process of a police commissioner? Because has that ever been disclosed how that happens? Is it like 5 people vote? And
I'm not aware of it. No,
that would be interesting to know how
right.
Is it meritocratic? Is it, you know, what are the reasons? You know, like when you appoint somebody to, you know, when you hire somebody for your company, right? You get through an interview process, you tick a few boxes.
Right.
I'd love to know what that is.
And I don't think we can have the conversation about whether an instance of discrimination took place until we determine whether there is a standard or a defined by law protocol for mm-hmm. selecting the new commission of police, right? So is there a protocol defined in law? Is there a policy that differs from the protocol? Were either of those used, right? Like, so we can't really determine whether quote-unquote discrimination in that process has taken place. We can say, though, that the question arises if this is a senior officer, if they've been passed over at least one time, mm-hmm. right? Is that enough to suggest that this is a discriminatory act? The appointment of a male officer over this female officer.
I mean, it could simply be seniority. You know, often, mm-hmm. and if you look at government, a lot of it is to do with how long you've been in a position.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be interesting to know if that is one of the main criteria.
But the way that our Constitution stands right now, because we did not have a successful referendum in 2016,
mm-hmm.
The way that the state reads it, the state can, quote-unquote, discriminate on the basis of sex and that discrimination would be protected or cannot be challenged, right? Or does not count as discrimination the way that the provisions are written. And so then, so that's another question, does it matter? Like if the, if it's not legal discrimination, then what does what we think matter? And then there's, I think there's another important question as well. What's the best fit for the force at this time? What is the, in the, what's the goal? What's the projection for the next 5-10 years? And is that appointment the right fit to achieve those goals over the time period? And all of those things have to be fleshed out. And I wish that the powers that be would have these conversations with us. I wish like they would sit down and very clearly say, look here, this is how this thing went. This is why we made this decision.
There seems to be a lot of stuff always done behind closed doors, you know, that we're not really familiar with. And I would always encourage more transparency, more openness. Mm-hmm. But are we ever going to get it? I mean, I'd love to see that. And I'm going on about FOIA. Mm-hmm. But that's been, what, 12 years?
Yeah.
And quiet, right?
Yeah.
Not a peep.
It's FOIA is just counterproductive to the political culture, man.
Yeah.
It doesn't align with the political culture.
Because the last administration got very close to it. You know, they even had a building, they had staffed it, and
we have, is it the information commissioner and the deputy commissioner, they've been appointed. And so let's not suggest that that process has been halted, right? Let's not suggest that the process has been halted. This may not be a stop, review, cancel situation, right? We're hoping that...
I hope not.
...that the... the agenda continues, and we hope that this proves to be a truly independent space through this process, right? The way that it transitions from one administration to the other would be the proof, right, that it's entrenched in a sound foundation. I got a text here that says, when I become PM, all prisoners will be intense and eating just bread and mayonnaise. Listen, I can tell you a story about the Bahamas. You let that happen. And they will be eating bread that they bake themselves and mayonnaise that they make themselves from eggs, from chickens that they raise themselves, and press the coconut oil from their own coconuts. And it'll probably be the best bread and mayonnaise in the country. And then only the people in Lyford Key and Albany and Old Fort Bay will be able to buy it. And then look where we'll be. Look where we'll be. And y'all still won't take the money you make from selling the things to the fancy people to upgrade the prison. Look where we'll be then. That's just madness, Texter. That's just madness. But thank you for sharing it with us. So, Mark, there were two things I wanted to talk about, the Rwandan migrant plan. Well, that's really, really heavy. Maybe we could get into that next week. But I'm going to ask all of my listeners to take a moment this week and Google the UK Rwanda Migration and Economic Development Partnership. Yeah.
Another brilliant... another brilliant scheme where there was no stakeholder participation, right?
I was about to ask
and
you
this is
if what,
this
the Bahamian government...
They must have advised them, eh?
Yes!
But, you know, you think when you come up with something which is innovative, looks innovative, right, you would get stakeholder involvement, you would check everything. All of a sudden now you're finding there's all these legal actions against the initiative because
Listen,
they never discussed it with the key stakeholders.
This issue... And I've lived in England for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. This issue, when I say I lived, I went to school. That's not really living. That's sufferation. But this is the first time I've seen British UK civil servants protest, like really protest. They didn't even really run hot when Boris Johnson and Partygate and then Boris Johnson had to get sinus surgery. They didn't even protest with that, right? The Partygate. But the Queen's Army... This is it here, because the civil service is the Queen's Army. The Queen's Army jump up and say, hold on, buddy. This plan, we're not sure if this makes sense. And then it's not binding in law. There's no legal repercussion or recourse. So if I was legally, say I'm Bahamian, go to England, tell these people the Queen is my cousin, because she is. Y'all don't fight me on that, right? I just come to heal up before... You know, she passed, bring greetings from the Chichanis, and I'm on vacation, and I lose my passport, and maybe I lose my little temper, you know, my little card, visa, and thing, and then the power went off, so your system went down. And then all of a sudden you're going to send me to Rwanda because you can't determine where I come from? You don't believe I come from the Bahamas? And then you're going to tell me I can't never come back into the UK? And this time I was here legally on a visa with a valid passport and it was just a clerical administrative mistake? You send me to Rwanda where I ain't never been? This is a doozy. And I think, you know, people should be concerned across the board. Anyway, Mark, we are all out of time. I am so sorry.
That's okay. Go for it.
I have to figure out how to stretch this hour into 2 hours. thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure.
Thank you for fleshing out the housing issue some more. It's going to be one of the most important issues. And if you don't see it on the surface, people, think about the collective psyche. How can you be ignoring homeless people and unhoused people in a country that subsidizes hotel stay for people who are supposed to be paying to participate in our tourism industry? Think about it. Anyway, have a great day, Bahamas. We come back tomorrow. We're talking more news, more headlines, more hot topics. Have a great day. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio AM is up next.